Welcome to the Marketing Mantra Podcast, brought to you by 99signals.com, a place to find top-notch content on a wide range of marketing topics, including SEO, social media marketing, content marketing, blogging, and more. Take your blog to the next level and achieve massive traffic growth by learning top blogging strategies discussed in the Marketing Mantra Podcast. And now, here is your host, Sandeep Mallya.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 73 of the Marketing Mantra Podcast. I'm Sandeep Mallya, the host of this podcast. Today, my guest is Brad Smith. Brad is the CEO of a SaaS company called Verdible and runs two successful agencies in the content production and digital PR industry. As a Business Insider featured copywriter, Brad is on a mission to slay awful content one blog at a time. His content has been featured in the New York Times, Business Insider, Moz, HubSpot, Shopify, Search Engine Journal, and 100 more publications. Our conversation today will revolve around B2B content marketing. More specifically, Brad will be sharing with us his unique framework for creating SERP-topping viral B2B content. Brad, welcome to the Marketing Mantra Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Sandeep. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, likewise. So, for those of my listeners who are not familiar with your work, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what led you to where you are now?
Yeah, definitely. That's a good question. How long do we have? No, I'm just kidding. So I started out doing all this kind of nerdy SEO stuff, like probably a little over a decade ago. And then I worked with a few different companies like in-house and then eventually started freelancing on my own. And then went out and was doing like solo consulting and then started an agency. So it's kind of been like a natural progression of this intersection of content and writing a lot with SEO. And then Codeless, my main business, I think I started around 8 years ago, but it was really like 6 or so years ago that it started to take off. And we now work with a lot of really big SaaS brands. And everything from like business and, you know, help desk, project management, all that fun stuff to cybersecurity and finance. And then from there, it's grown into USERP, which is a PR link building company, and now Verdible, which we acquired about a year ago and have rebuilt and are relaunching. So it's been a natural progression, but a lot of crazy stuff in between, as you can imagine.
The first question I would like to ask you is, what differentiates B2B content from B2C content?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a good question because there's a lot of things. Number one, I think you have to look at the sales cycle. So if whatever we're talking about in marketing and blogging and creating content, what essentially we're doing is just demand generation. We're trying to create demand and drive it into whether it's a website, an app, a product, whatever. And with B2B versus B2C, that entire sales cycle tends to take a lot longer. And you're also dealing with buyers who tend to be either more sophisticated or they're spending a lot more money on it. And so they're spending a lot more time actually researching it. So it's like, if we were gonna go buy a house, for example, or if we were gonna go spend like a lot of money on a vacation, we'd spend a lot longer on researching that decision as opposed to like just buying, you know, like even a new iPhone or a new TV, you know, a new t-shirt or whatever. So in B2B content, especially, it might take someone, you know, 3 to 6 months to actually figure out they want to work with your company individually. And again, all the content we're doing is almost as a way to build that trust with them and build that credibility with them and like slowly kind of push them in the right direction of our product and let them know or let them realize that it's the best, you know, solution for them.
I'm just curious, what led you to focus on creating content for B2B companies? I mean, you've been working closely with B2B brands for several years now. What is it that really, you know, convinced you that this is what you should be working with? These are the kind of clients you should be working with.
Yeah, that's a good question. I must like the complexity of it, I think, in that, like, if we were trying to create content for like an e-commerce company for t-shirts, for example, from a content perspective, there's not a whole lot you're doing there. Like, it's very short, it's very generic content. You're doing product descriptions. You're doing like really, there's more emphasis on like images, video, other types of media. And so from a content perspective, people will probably disagree with me, but I feel like there's not a whole lot going on there. A lot of like interesting stuff. Where you see the really interesting stuff is more on the B2B side. It tends to be more in areas or spaces that are difficult. They're technical, they're complex. There's a very hard like sales process or pitch that needs to take place. Mm-hmm. And so right. therefore it takes a lot of different types of content, whether it's video, whether it's comparisons, whether it's long form interviews. Like it takes a few different types of content to actually successfully mm-hmm. do it. And yeah. I think I like that it's kind of like a giant puzzle piece
right.
in that sense.
Yeah. So you said you spoke about complexity, the technicality, but the perception out there is that B2B content is boring, right?
Yep.
And you find yeah. it interesting. So that's something that I really wanted to learn more about, because I went to your profile and it seems like you have more experience working with B2B clients, and you've been featured in all these publications, New York Times, Business Insider, despite creating B2B content. So are there any tips? We'll get into details as to how you can create SEO-focused content and make your content have that shareability factor. But can you just tell us a little bit about how you went about creating, building your brand, building your own personal brand, and you got featured in so many publications. So if there's someone out there who's working at a similar agency and would like to get featured in all these publications, so how do they do that?
Yeah, definitely. It's a really good question. So there's a few things. So it'll kind of be like a long answer. But the fine line that you mentioned is most B2B content is really boring. And that's what we try. That's what we need to like kind of fight against. So how do you right. not do that? It's boring because the products or services or whatever we're trying to sell tend to be more technical. So you have to include, just by definition, you have to include a lot more like detail and a lot more depth. The other problem, like you mentioned too, is the SEO focus. So we also want to create evergreen content that's going to be around forever. If we're spending a lot of time and money on creating one piece of content, we want to make sure that it actually has like a shelf life of a few years, not just like a little bit of referral traffic from sharing it on Facebook and then nothing else after a day or two. So you need to match search intent. You need to create content that is similar, but unique or different from everything else currently ranking. Otherwise you're never going to show up. You need to create something that like satisfies that user curiosity around your product or service and all the like technical specs and details. So the final piece of the puzzle is how do you make it not boring? There's a few things. Number one, the thing that I tried to do when I was writing a lot about this and also writing personally for a lot of brands was how do you bring in some personality and something that's going to differentiate it from everyone else? And so I guess a good example of this would be Adespresso that was acquired by Hootsuite a couple of years ago.
Right.
I used to write for them a lot, a lot of the writers on that blog actually did a really good job of creating interesting, like in-depth content, all that stuff. But it was also okay to kind of color outside the lines a little bit and say like pop culture references or like that the audience would immediately understand right. to write in like a different way. And that if we're going to make it, if most content on this is very formal and complex, we're going to make it very simple and we're going to make the sentences very choppy, almost like how we're having a discussion right now.
Right.
We're going to include like stupid jokes, even if sometimes they're like slightly inappropriate, just because what it does is it makes an audience kind of take notice and actually remember who that is and feel a little bit more emotion for that kind of space. So that's definitely part of it. Another big piece of it is actually have something interesting to say. So too many times in B2B content, especially when we're writing for SEO, a lot of the content tends to be just like duplicates of each other. And they're all kind of like the same structure, same headings, basically saying the same content. Mm-hmm. How can you like spice that up, make it interesting? So if you're not doing it with like copywriting, you could be doing it with just the data you're covering. So if everyone else in your, and we did this again with another big affiliate publishing brand in like website hosting. Mm. All website hosting content is basically like the same. What this client did that was like above and beyond is they would actually build the test site, track those results in like a third party tool like Pingdom to be able to show uptime, to be able to show all these different like actual original data and include that in all the articles we were doing. So that was another really interesting way to kind of set it apart, because what it did, it gave us, we were able to provide opinions on things, but be able to back it up with actual real data and stuff. And so it kind of helped the two worlds where we could, as far as the copywriting goes, we could stick our neck out a little more. We could say things or take a harder opinion or a harder edge on things because we had better data to work with than most other, you know, competitors.
So it was resonating on an emotional level. And then you had data for the rational side of our brain. So that's really interesting. You mentioned that there are a lot of copycat articles out there. I mean, these wouldn't be plagiarism, but they make the same points, right? So, for example, if you give a search on SaaS SEO, you'll find a ton of articles in the first page, and they all look similar. They're all making the same points. So this is something that I say to my listeners and the readers of my blog. You need to create 10x content. You need to create content that is 10 times better than the top ranking content out there. And the way to do that is, like you said, it needs to be a mix of data driven content, and you need to resonate emotionally. I mean, you need to know that there's a human on the other side. And sometimes B2B content gets a little too formal. And that's one of the problems I think we are facing in the industry. And since you have more experience working with B2B clients, you would know what exactly the problem is. And my next question is, I wanted to know, what does an effective piece of B2B content look like? And by that, I mean an article that ticks all the boxes in your checklist, that's ranking well on Google, that has certain viral elements. Can you share a few examples?
Yeah, definitely. So I like to think of it almost like, as we mentioned, I think at the top, like a framework, or think of it like a checklist. So it needs to have so many variables to be like a successful piece of content. And then within that, some of those are different groups. So for example, you might have like the SEO bucket, where does this piece of content actually match search intent? So if search intent is showing how-to or articles and it's educational content, but you're trying to do like a landing page or a commercial page, it's never gonna work. You're never gonna rank. So does it match search intent? Does it include an answer what people are trying to see, as far as like people also ask questions about Google? Does it related searches like down at the bottom that show you if someone is asking about this, then they're also asking about these questions? Some other semantic keywords and ideas. So we use Market News and then also ClearScope and Surfer and other tools like that to provide the semantic keywords. All that stuff is great because it gives you kind of like a skeleton of what the article should look like on the backbone. The challenge then is, don't just write to that and don't just create a copycat of everyone else that's out there. The challenge then is, okay, let's actually get into the writing. Does the writer actually know what they're talking about when they write about this? Like, are they actually a subject matter expert? Yes or no? You tend to find two things. You tend to find, are they making absolute statements? Like, this is always the case, or this is never the case. That usually indicates that they don't understand all the gray area in the middle. They don't understand the nuance that actually this can be right or this can be wrong, depending on certain cases or depending on the example. The other thing is specificity. So are they actually giving really, really specific tips or advice or takeaways or lessons or whatever? And if not, again, if they're just kind of like giving broad general statements that like any beginner content would have, they probably don't know enough about that space to be writing on it. So if they don't, the caveat there, or the way to solve that is, talk to other experts. So whether that's interviewing other like third-party experts at other places, or if there's someone in that company or in a client's company that is an expert on that topic, how can you interview them and get their kind of insight to add that like additional color or depth to the actual piece itself? So that's just like a general idea of like some of the things we look at. And then we also look at like, how are you actually getting this stuff across? So if stuff that's actually ranking, if average is 2,000 words, typically it's going to be on the longer end. Let's say it's 2,000 words. What else are we doing with that to showcase the original data that we have, showcase like the credibility we have? So typically that comes back to things like, if it's not quotes, which we kind of touched on already, but it could be stats. It could be specific proprietary examples that other people don't have. It could be like customer data. It could be better graphs and images and charts and custom illustrations. It could be video. Like, what are the other things we can now add to this to kind of make it a little more interesting and a little more in depth? And usually it's not easy, but if you're able to combine all those things into one article, that one article will tend to be a lot better than most of the other stuff already out there.
Right. You've already mentioned Ad Espresso, and I guess another example would be HubSpot. But are there any B2B brands out there that are consistently producing awesome content that are literally setting a benchmark?
Yeah, definitely. One other selfish example would be Monday.com. So they're a client of ours. We work with Monday.com, and we publish a lot, like over 100 articles a month.
Okay.
And I think the interesting thing there too is, because their project management tool could apply to different use cases, is we might write we might write for the construction industry, like how to do certain types of project management in the construction industry. But then we might also write for agile software development. Those are two very different spaces, right, as you could imagine. And so that's part of the challenge on the writing side is we often need to have different writers write that different content. It's the same overall strategy, same overall workflow, same way we're doing keyword research, editing, all that kind of stuff. But to our point a second ago, you often need to have different types of writers for those different spaces, just because, again, we want someone who actually knows what they're talking about in the construction space and versus agile software development, which tend to be two different readers and two different levels of like sophistication. So I think Monday.com does a really good job on that, because they do both quantity and quality, and that's the hard thing.
You're right.
It's easy to do one or the other. It's easy to do like one article a week and make it really good, or to do like 100 articles a month and make them really bad and just pump them all out. The trick is, how do you do both at the same time?
How do you balance both?
Is
it always long form articles that rank well on Google? What's your take on that?
No. So actually, maybe like, let's say 3, 4, or 5 years ago, I feel like length and word count had a bigger influence. So you could just write like 10,000 words and everyone else had 2,000 words. And it would almost, it seemed to correlate with a better lift in rankings. I don't think that's necessarily the case now. I tend to just look at what the average, roughly the average is of what's already ranking. So and again, this varies a lot, but if the average for what's ranking is around 1,000 words, I tend to go a little lower. So maybe I'll do like 1,000 to 1,500. If it's, you know, that being said, if like three of the 10 best pieces of content on that page are 6,000 words, then I'll probably go to 6,000. So it just kind of depends on like where the market is. And again, a lot of that has to also filter back to like, what do people actually want to see or read when they get to this? I don't think it's a good thing to either be too low or too high. You kind of want to be in the same range.
Right.
And then from there, it's like, how do we do a better job of actually using that word count? So if I was trying to rank for something that was only using 1,000 words, could I use a video to add into that to explain more or go into more detail if people actually wanted to see it or wanted to read it? So you kind of can try to solve both problems, I guess, at the same time.
Right. Yeah. Good tip there. Now, the typical workflow when you're creating any sort of content is to do keyword research, check the search intent of the keywords that you're targeting, map your competition. We've already spoken briefly about that. See what's already ranking in the SERPs, and then aim at creating something better, something more original, and something unique. Is that the same workflow you follow when you're creating B2B content, or are there any different steps involved?
That's pretty much the same, with two other considerations. The first is, what is like, how related is this to our brand? So if we're thinking of like top of the funnel content, middle of the funnel, bottom of the funnel content, the reason I bring that up is because in the B2B space, it tends to be more competitive and less volume. So if I were to give you an example of like, let's say international SEO is a keyword, that might only have like 100 to 200 or, you know, low hundreds of monthly searches. And that's not that many. But if you look at the competition ranking for that is going to be probably like Search Engine Land, Neil Patel, Content Marketing Institute. It's going to be all these massive brands. And so the point is that the risk reward doesn't always make sense. It doesn't make sense to try to compete for something like that, that's competitive when the volume is so low. Even if it's kind of related to your brand, it's not always going to make sense. The caveat to that is, if one of the things we'll look at in the B2B space might be cost per click, like PPC data, because it helps us figure out how commercial this content is. So is the buying intent stronger for one piece of content, because it might show a cost per click of like $100 per click. So it might only show in a natural keyword research tool, like 50 to 100 searches a month. But if that buying intent is really strong and the topic itself is really related to the product or something, so it tends to be more bottom of the funnel, then it's usually totally worth going after. And so that's kind of like the big question mark that we start with is, can this website actually rank for this piece of content in, you know, the next few months? Well, if they're fine going, you know, 2-3 years down the road, because they're going for something really competitive and they're trying to dominate a space, then that's fine. We could still create content on that. What often happens is people will choose keywords that are too competitive for where they're at currently, and then they can't figure out why they can't rank. They're doing the TEDx content, they're doing the link building, they're doing all the other things, but their website and their brand is so far away from what they're trying to compete with that it's just a matter of time, you know. And that's like, it's not always an easy fix, other than just keep at it for a couple of years, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. So a lot of my listeners are small business owners. So a last question based on the SEO side of things before we move on to creating viral content, because these are two different aspects. One has social media aspect involved in it. What I wanted to ask you was about Google Eat. Google Eat stands for expertise, authority, and trustworthiness. And when you're just starting out, when you're a small business, you may have expertise, but you probably don't have authority or trust. So you need to build on these things, and this takes time. How can a B2B startup tackle this situation? Because in most cases, they'll be up against organic competitors who have a much higher domain authority and trust factor than them. So what do you recommend to startups who are, you know, up against tough competitors in organic search?
Yeah, definitely. The first would be to try to leverage a personal brand in the company as much as possible. So even if your company was small that you were at, but let's say the founder had been in the industry for 20 years, try to leverage that personal brand as much as possible, even if that means just ghostwriting content under that person's name. That's often like an easy place to start, because those people are usually experts. If they've started a successful small business and are starting to grow it, they've probably been around for a while. The other thing would be to piggyback on other brands as much as possible. So how can you work with either other organizations? How can you pitch content to them? How can you ask them for quotes for things? And what are you actually going to give them? So sometimes I'm trying to, like, in the Eat space, or I should say Eat was a huge thing. It really came out. It seemed like it really like broke out as a wider concept with like medical content, especially.
Right. Yeah.
Because there was so much like content around medical stuff that wasn't actually accurate.
Right.
Unfortunately,
I think they called it "Your Money, Your Life" queries, YMYL queries.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah, it was either finance or medical content. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think what the interesting thing is there, if you look at industries like that, is a lot of times, like a doctor, for instance, a doctor doesn't always want or need a big social following, or they don't necessarily need to have like a huge website. But if you're able to interview a doctor and just use their name and use their credentials and their credibility to help authenticate your content, or if they helped either edit it after the fact, or they helped give you quotes or something else to add to it, but that's another way to add that credibility that you probably don't have internally, and just leverage other people's brands as much as possible. Another type of different example that I used in the past when I worked with a smaller company was we would try to like do like a big promotion, do something really interesting that was going to drive a lot of like traffic and followers and stuff to other brands. Right. And then use that concept to kind of like pitch to them. So if a big brand, the trick is like figuring out what big brands want or need, because they don't need money. Sometimes it's like exclusivity. Sometimes it's something unique in that like you can help give them something and they'll help you out in return. And so it's the same kind of concept where we did like a big contests or big promotion, and we had a bunch of other companies just donate their product essentially. So it was like, we're gonna send a couple bloggers around on a big trip, and each company was gonna pitch in like a hotel or an airline ticket or car or like an activity at these places. And so by getting all these people to work together, we had something really interesting to promote, and then we were able to kind of like put our brand up with these other big ones. They were more interested in the exposure of like the whole campaign, as opposed to like working with us directly, if that makes any sense. So we weren't the appeal there. The appeal was like, hey, we're already doing this huge promotion. It's already going to get a ton of attraction and interest because of all these reasons. You sell that idea as opposed to like sell them on the idea of working with you directly. Because again, you don't necessarily have that like that clout or that credibility.
Yeah, that leverage. I think you also invariably built a lot of backlinks through this strategy. Maybe that was not your main objective, but when you do this, you also tend to attract a lot of backlinks.
Totally. 100%. So it was a big thing where we got content creation. So the people we were sending different places actually created video content. They created stuff for us. We were able to also leverage that, like you're saying, into a lot of like natural backlinks, a bunch of like natural PR about companies and other places covering this idea and this promotion, just because it was unique and different and not something that you see every day. And so I think that's definitely part of the challenge is how do we, whenever we're doing something, how do we like combine as many tactics as possible? So if we're doing, if we're like a lot of bad link building tactics tend to be ones that are designed just for link building. So if you're focusing too much on just building links, you tend to go, you tend to chase after these really like kind of crazy tactics or things that if you took a step back and actually thought about it, you'd probably realize it's not the best use of your time. Like maybe a better use of your time would be to like create this really interesting study, actually survey 1,000 people, then use that to kind of like reach out to experts and say, hey, we just surveyed 1,000 people in this space. Here's some really interesting stuff that we found. What do you think about this? Would you have any comment on it? And then take their examples and then compile all this stuff into a really interesting piece of content and then share it out. And then you're going to naturally get a ton of attention and stuff because that the actual content asset is so good and interesting. It's going to naturally attract and make it a lot easier to promote.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Google also recommends, right? I mean, natural backlinks are the best backlinks. It's amazing how link building has evolved in the last few years. And it was a totally different discipline 10 years back. And now, you know, it mixes so many disciplines. Like you said, when you create, you know, awesome content, you attract natural backlinks. And even the outreach that you do has to be a little more sophisticated, fine-tuned, customized to each person you are, you know, sending an email to. It should be personalized. And that's something that many people are not doing right now. And because of that, they're not generating enough backlinks and they're not ranking well. So far, we have touched upon creating SEO-focused articles. Let's talk about B2B content that goes viral. So in the B2B space, how can you dominate search rankings and at the same time have that shareability factor that fetches your articles a ton of social shares, likes, and engagement?
Yeah, definitely. So viral B2B content just generally tends to be more top of the funnel, meaning it tends to be less influenced or it tends to do a lot less for your brand from a sales perspective. Right. Or from like a lead generation perspective, which you kind of have to like be okay with. So that's part of the, because it's naturally going to be less tied to like what you actually do. So if you sell whatever, if you sell CRM software, like nobody actually cares about CRM software that much. So making something like that go viral is going to be really difficult. But what is something with CRM software that you can do to do that would actually attract interest for on a number of different ways? A really good example of this would be one of our friends, Gaetano, who works at Nextiva. Nextiva is a VoIP software brand. Again, very boring for most people. It's critical. It's critical. It's very important. But from like an interest standpoint, it's very boring. And so one thing they did is they went to a local mall around their headquarters, and they would go up to like random people at the mall and start trying their cold B2B like LinkedIn sales messages that you always see. So you always get these like really, really corny, really bad sales messages on LinkedIn.
And the automated sales messages.
Yeah, exactly. So they would just basically read those like verbatim to strangers in the mall just to show how like awkward and awful they were. And it was the whole point of like just kind of like highlighting how dumb and how bad like most online tactics, almost to our point a minute ago about chasing link building tactics too much. We do things online that don't really make a whole lot of sense from like a real human social perspective. And so that ended up creating this really funny video. I want to say they were even kicked out of the mall at some point because people thought they were like nuts and thought they were crazy. And so doing something like that was really kind of interesting and just off the wall. And it drove a ton. I don't have the data in front of me, but it drove like a ton of views, a ton of action on LinkedIn, a ton of comments, just naturally because people were just were just really like entertained, for lack of a better
that's
word.
Something most of the LinkedIn users have experienced in the past, so it resonates with the entire target market there.
And so I think the catch there though is, as good as that was, it wasn't super tied into like selling VoIP and phones to companies. And so you got to know how to leverage both worlds. You got to do, it's not like doing one or the other. Getting all that attention, but not doing anything with it would be useless. So how do we still now how do we have this, we have this huge audience of engaged people. Mm-hmm. How do we get them into the other stuff we're doing that mm-hmm. might be a little more relevant to our product or whatever. But I think that is an important concept to keep in mind, is that when you do this viral stuff, it needs to be something, like you mentioned, that instantly connects with a lot of people, like a kind of the mass market in your space. Mm. And usually it's finding that interesting angle on something that is the hard part. It's how do you find the good idea and actually execute it, as opposed to like pre-planning it too much or trying to have something too choreographed and too scripted.
Okay. We mentioned a few tools here and there, but which are some of the SEO and content tools that you consider essential for B2B marketers?
Yeah, definitely. So we use Ahrefs, like most people do, for keyword research. And then I also will compare that with MarketMuse. So Ahrefs SEO tools are great for showing you like one perspective. They're great for showing you like one aspect of what makes content marketing successful or SEO successful. What you then often need to do is compare what I'm looking at for a keyword or on a SERP, like the actual content ranking and a search engine result page, in something like MarketMuse, because I want to actually dive a little deeper and figure out what does it look like from a content perspective. So a lot of times I'll use like these tools at the same time, where I'm kind of like bouncing between those, and then I'll often bounce just looking at Google too, in a private browser, looking at Google to actually figure out like what is showing up and why, and what are these related questions and related ideas, all that kind of stuff. Another tool. So we also then will use Google Docs for everything.
Collaboration.
Because it's very simple and it's easy and to collaborate when we're passing content from like a content brief that like a strategy person might put together to the writers, to the editors. Like it's just the easiest place to be able to collaborate on all those things. We again selfishly use Wordable, the tool that we acquired a year ago and rebuilt. So we use Wordable to then take all this content from Google Docs and move it in bulk into a content management system. So for all of us, I'm kind of old school, so we use WordPress on a lot of things. But I know a lot of other people use more sophisticated content management tools like Contentful, like new ones, or Webflow or HubSpot, or even Shopify, BigCommerce. We use Wordable to kind of push all this content. We approve it and we edit it and we do all like the hard work and the heavy lifting in the Google Doc. And then we push it into one of these websites or content management tools and then publish it kind of instantly after that. So we don't have to do a lot of the manual labor and a lot of the manual on-page optimization after the fact. So that's kind of like what our typical workflow looks like. I'm probably skipping things. Like we use Writer, which is kind of like a Grammarly alternative, for instance, to help edit the content, because we, not just for copy editing, but also for style. They have a really good tool that helps you build out style templates. So if certain clients or certain sites like phrasing one way or the other, or like a grade level one way or the other, we can use tools like that to kind of help give a second pair of eyeballs.
Okay. I wanted to ask your opinion on these AI-powered content creation tools, and that industry has really blown up in the last few months. And I'm an AppSumo affiliate, and every other deal on the site looks like an AI-powered content creation tool. I'm not a big fan of them. I just wanted to hear your take on it.
Yeah, definitely. So I think what's important to I'm with you in that I don't think it's very far along quite yet. A lot of what these AI tools do are doing from a content perspective. Number one, they may not be doing AI at all. So they might just be doing something in the background that's like very, it's just like conditional statements, like if like live chat and all these chatbots, for instance. None of them are using AI. All they're using are like conditional statements that say like, if someone asks for this, or someone pre-selects from this range of variables, then answer with this or answer with that. And there's like a branching effect where you have like these different like role-playing scenarios. That's not really like AI, because nothing's really like evolving or the machine isn't learning and getting better because of that data. It's just like pre-filling answers that you already gave it. True AI, what it's doing currently in the content creation space is it's taking in all this data. So it might look at like, let's say the top 30 articles ranking on this topic. And then it's kind of just like regurgitating a lot of that stuff. So it's not yet at the point where it's creating interesting in-depth content. All the stuff we've been talking about this whole time about like, how do you actually stand out? How do you create like a content that actually is successful, both from a viral standpoint that's humorous or engaging or interesting or emotional, And then, or how do you create something that's in depth enough that's actually going to sell your product or service at the end of the day? Mm-hmm. AI can't do that currently. It's just kind of regurgitating facts and information. Mm-hmm. And what happens is the end result tends to be like very almost watered down. It tends to be very like fact-driven, very like simplified or simplistic. And it doesn't give you kind of enough to actually do anything with. So I think it's useful from a standpoint of understanding, like if people are looking for topic X or keyword X, mm-hmm. they're kind of interested in reading about these areas, like these semantic or topically related areas. Mm. It's kind of helpful for that standpoint. Mm. As you mentioned, it's not really helpful. It's not going to give you something that is ready to publish. Yeah. It's going to need a lot of work from an editor, from other writers to kind of like amp it up a little bit. Yeah, it's going to need a lot more work after the fact to actually get it to a point where you'd be happy publishing it.
Right.
That could all change. That could all change. But right now, that's kind of how it is.
Yeah. So like I said, it's good for getting semantics and also probably developing an outline or framework for the content that you're creating.
Yep.
What really baffles me is all these top publications making predictions that, AI-powered content tools will replace humans. And I don't think we are anywhere close to that. It may take years before AI evolves to that extent.
I think part of the problem with that too, and this rings true again for the B2B space in general, a lot of times the people writing that content aren't experts.
Right.
And I think that's a big thing that people need to realize is where they get their information from. And then conversely, when they're creating content, how do you actually separate that out? And I think the challenge is if those people were actually testing it and doing it on a daily basis, like we often are, I think they'll pretty quickly realize like how short-sighted those like bold proclamations are. A lot of times they're creating content that is just going to like touch a nerve and mm-hmm. we just had this bad pandemic and people are losing jobs, and so they're playing to this fear of like robots are gonna like, and you have stuff like people are being forced to take on side gigs, like they're doing Uber or Lyft, or they're driving food to people's houses like DoorDash. It's playing to this like wider fear-based narrative that AI is gonna, and the robots are gonna take everyone's jobs. And yes, I'm sure at some point that's going to be true. But I think what people need to realize is this is a very like long-term thing, and it's going to take a while before any of that's actually true.
True. One last thing I wanted to ask you about, taking your content viral is the importance of headlines, right? And gone are the days when, clickbait headlines used to work. Like BuzzFeed really popularized that, BuzzFeed and Gawker. And they've also evolved when it comes to, honing their headlines. But are there any tools that you use for creating effective headlines? Because that's really important, right? You have to get people to click on your article when you share it on social media. So what is it? Is there any specific tool that you would recommend for this?
Yeah, so there are SEO like testing experiment type tools. Two off the top of my head, and there's probably a lot more that I'm not thinking of, but ClickFlow, I want to say, is one of them. Okay. Another one that's similar to this might be something that's for like you could use on a smaller website, would be like Thrive Headlines. And I think it's still around. Hmm. But the general idea is you can run different, you can compare or make tests and experiments, and you can actually show audiences different. It's almost like A/B testing for headlines. So you can show audiences different versions of things and then see kind of what works best, and then go with the winner. The important point I would stress before this is like, just because you can test five, headline ideas, that's great. But like, how are you actually going to write the headlines in the first place and know they're any good? So for that, I would recommend a resource called Headline Hacks from John Morrow, who's a brilliant writer. And Headline Hacks is, it's like a list of, let's say, 50 to 100 headline formulas and kind of templates with the background of like, this category is going to be almost like we mentioned a minute ago, like external, like protect yourself from an external threat versus help solve or fix a mistake you might already be making versus like, how do we give Zen to your life and simplify your life in certain ways?
Okay.
So there's different, he kind of does a really good job breaking those down into what the actual emotions are behind each type of template. Mm-hmm. And then again, giving you a list of all these different categories that you could then take and kind of like practice yourself. So once you just work on that and work on headline writing, mm-hmm. and writing multiple headline variations for each article you're doing, that helps you kind of build that muscle, so to speak, mm-hmm. where you become a lot better over time at writing headlines or writing really good, short, kind of catchy content.
Right. Great. This last question is something that I ask most of my podcast guests. What are some of the business books that really inspired you when you started your own business? And what are some of the books you would recommend to other entrepreneurs and, in your case, copywriters?
Definitely. So from a business perspective, I would recommend Blue Ocean Strategy.
Oh, yeah.
Because it helps you better understand positioning. Right. So if you're, and this could, I guess this could apply to copywriters, for instance. There's a million copywriters. Like, there's a million copywriters that write B2B content. There's a million copywriters that do B2B content in the SaaS space. So like, what's mm-hmm. actually unique about you or your offering or your service or whatever that's going to set you apart? I think that's mm-hmm. part of it. And so Blue Ocean Strategy is a good one for that. The hard part is then, how do you scale anything? So a book for that would be Work the System. Work the System would be a really good example. Okay. So it's like, how do you actually build out systems and processes to scale whatever service or product you're trying to sell?
Mm-hmm.
So those would be more on the like businessy end of the equation. From a copywriting perspective, in the early going, I would probably recommend old school copywriting stuff, mm-hmm. like stuff by Robert Bly, I want to say, and Dan Kennedy, like old school copywriters like that, but also even more old school, like Ogilvy and all those, like from mm-hmm. you know, back in the 60s. A lot of what we're doing today, all the content stuff we're doing today, the content marketing, has been around for like decades, if not centuries. So the Michelin Guide for restaurants mm-hmm. came about because I think it was a pair of brothers, maybe they, mm-hmm. with their Michelin tire business, they were trying to sell more tires. They were trying to get people in cars to drive around Europe more to go to more restaurants. And so
I think that was the first content marketing example. I mean, this is really old school content marketing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like hundreds of years old. And another example would be John Deere, I think, did something similar where it was maybe, I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but it was maybe like a catalog type idea where they were. And so I think it's important to realize even lessons from advertising in the 60s when everything was very print based. All that kind of stuff is still very relevant today and still very important.
Okay. So I recently read Everybody Writes by Anne Hanley. That's also a pretty good book when it comes to copywriting. And, aspiring copywriters and entrepreneurs can probably check that book out. Yeah. So I think we have covered almost everything that we wanted to discuss. Thank you so much, Brad, for being a guest on Marketing Mantra. I really appreciate the conversation we had. I really enjoyed it, and a lot of insights for our listeners as well. And to anyone who's listening out there, we have links to everything we discussed in the show notes. So you can check that out. Until next time, thank you for tuning in. Thanks once again, Brad. It was awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Likewise. Have a good night.
You too.
Marketing Mantra with Sandeep Mallya is a podcast by 99 Signals, a place to find top-notch content on a wide range of online marketing topics. To get started, visit 99signals.com/best to check out all the top-rated articles on the blog, or simply view the description of each episode to download free online marketing resources to level up your marketing skills. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question or topic suggestion for Sandeep? Simply send a voice message via Anchor app or send an email to podcasts@99signals.com. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Marketing Mantra on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or any major podcast player.